Morning. I call the Senate Finance Committee to order. Today is February 9th, 2022. The time is 9:05. I'll round it up. Please silence all cell phones. Co-Chair Stedman, Senator Hoffman, Senator Von Imhoff, Senator Wilson, Senator Olson, Senator Bilikowski, my staff, Senator Bishop, we are full complement in person. Good morning. Thanks, everybody. Today's agenda, first action item is SB 33, Seafood Product Development Tax Credit. This is the third hearing of SB 33. Our intention is to adopt the committee substitute, cover fiscal notes, and look to the will of the committee. We have a CS for introduction. Senator Von Imhoff.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that the Senate Finance Committee adopt the committee substitute for Senate Bill 33, Finance, 32-LS0308/N before the committee as our working document.
And I'll object for purposes of discussion. Ms. Shine, would you please come forward and explain the changes to us, please?
For the record, I'm Erin Shine. I'm staff to co-chair Bishop and the Senate Finance Committee. As I covered 2 days ago when this committee adopted a new committee substitute, the CS creates a new set of statutes, AS 4375037, the Fisheries Product Development Tax Credit, that is modeled after the repealed Salmon and Herring Product Development Tax Credit. In this CS, eligible fish are defined as salmon, herring, pollock, Pacific cod, and sablefish. The CS's effective date is no longer retroactive, but has an immediate effective date, and the sunset date of the Fisheries Product Development Tax Credit is January 1st, 2027. The difference between the version that we adopted 2 days ago and today is the incorporation of an amendment that would make the number of recipients and the total amount of tax credits claimed for each type of eligible fish a matter of public record. Those changes can be found with the inclusion of sections 1, 2, 3, and 8, and with subsection J in section 4 and confirming changes in section 6 and 9. With that, Mr. Chairman, I'm happy to answer any questions the committee may have.
Thank you. Seeing none, I'll remove my objection. Senator Wilson, would you cover the fiscal notes?
Yes, Mr. Chair. This is OMB component 2476, Department of Revenue, Tax Treasury, Tax Division. This fiscal note will end up in a decrement for the general fund and $1.6 million in FY23, $3 million in FY24 deficit, $3.4 million in 26, $3.5 and basically $3.6 in 27, and $2.7 in 28, Mr. Chair. This is ranging from the fiscal years from the value of the tax salmon herring tax credit ranging from $2.3 to $4.4 million in revenue.
Thank you. Any questions on the fiscal notes? Seeing none, Senator Von Imhoff.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move the committee substitute for Senate Finance Bill 33, Finance 32-LS0308/N from committee with the attached fiscal note and individual committee recommendations.
Seeing no objections, the bill moves from committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes. We're going to take a brief at ease while we change presenters and get schooled up and sign the document. We're back on the record. Next is a deferred maintenance update from Office of Management and Budget, Mr. Neil Steininger. And Mr. Steininger would, and after Mr. Steininger's presentation, we will then have the University of Alaska, Mr. Chad Hutchinson. First up, Mr. Steininger, you know the drill,
Mr. Chairman.
Good morning. For the record, Neil Steininger, Director of the Office of Management and Budget.
Senator Stedman.
Thank you. Before, Mr. Chairman, before we drop into the presentation today, it's come to my attention that there's a question or concern on a appropriation we made at the table to the Voice of the Arctic. I would just like to, I'm sure the OMB director is aware of it, just to let him know it's of interest that we take a look at that appropriation. I looked at the grant application. It didn't quite match what was at the table presented here. For whatever reason, there seems to be a need for some more backup. I just want to make sure, Mr. Chairman, that the OMB director, and I'm sure he follows similar concerns, that we take a look at that appropriation and we double check it. And my recommendation to OMB, if at all possible, if they're not to release funds for until you have time to review that. I don't think there's been any funds released on that $1 million appropriation, but I think it would be in everybody's best interest to just take a look at that first before any funds are released, and if there's any issues, we deal with them. And that's I just thought I'd mention that to the OMB director, we'll just take a look at that subject matter at some point to make sure everything matches up.
Thank you for your comments on that topic, Senator Stedman, and you're correct. As of yesterday, no funds had been expended from the information our office had received. So thank you for that. All right. Mr. Steininger.
Okay, so I'll be covering the first portion of this presentation, but we also have Melanie Arnold, the Director of Facilities Services. The second half of this presentation goes into a lot more operational programmatic detail on how deferred maintenance funding is allocated and how the Division of Facilities Services, works through that allocation with agencies and OMB. And so I'll be sharing some of that technical information and asking for her assistance a little bit later on in the presentation.
Could you repeat her name again?
Yes, it's Melanie Arnold. She's the Director of Facilities Services, and I believe she also has staff Christopher Hodgen, who's one of her lead staff, maybe online as well to help her out.
I see Christopher, but Melanie, right?
Yes, Melanie Arnold.
Is she not showing up on my screen?
Thumbs up.
I don't see her yet, but somebody would have to help me because I'm technologically challenged anyway. Before you kick off, I want to just, this is at a point in our slide deck from, Monday or Friday, that where we were on your overview, we had a very robust debate, conversation on page 11 or page 12 on deferred maintenance. So now we're going to get into the meat of that slides 12 some more here with some more detail. And just, Mr. Steininger, correct me if I'm wrong, but this transition into OMB, that started under the Walker administration. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Thank you. All right, please proceed.
So a little bit on just what deferred maintenance is. So deferred maintenance is maintenance of state facilities that's been deferred or delayed. So in an ideal world, you would cover all your maintenance needs within your normal operating maintenance budget, within your just normal activity over the course of the year. However, the world's not ideal, and some of those projects and some of those maintenance concerns have to be delayed for one reason or another. Sometimes that can build up into a backlog of what we call the deferred maintenance backlog, and those are all of those projects that weren't able to be accommodated in annual operating maintenance spending, or were just projects a little bit too large to be accommodated there or too complex to be done within the course of a normal fiscal year. And so that those projects end up on that deferred maintenance list, and that's really how we're handling that list, and that growing backlog is, you know, what we're addressing here today through these appropriation requests. So the state of Alaska has over 2,400 facilities, which includes the facilities at the University of Alaska. That accounts for over 20 million square feet of space spread across 14 state agencies. And the important thing to note here is every agency has sort of different types of buildings. You know, we have here, we're seeing in the Capitol building, you know, we have office buildings, but we also have, you know, remote cabins for fisheries workers or DNR workers, you know, individuals that have to, you know, store chainsaws, things like that. The characteristic is much different than, you know, say the Capitol building or the state office building. So there is a large diversity in, you know, function and purpose of the facilities that the state manages.
Senator Wilson?
And just quickly, Mr. Chair, could you remind me, Ms. Steininger, how the Building Public Fund works and how many facilities are included in that pool?
Through the Chair, Senator Wilson, the Public Building Fund, I don't know the exact number of facilities, I'd have to get back to you, but they are generally speaking, more of the office buildings are part of the Public Building Fund, so like the State Office Building, the Court Plaza Building here in town, or the Atwood Building up in Anchorage. You know, your more traditional office building belong to what's called the Public Building Fund. Agencies that have space in those buildings pay in effectively a lease payment that's based on the square footage that they use, and that covers depreciation on the building, maintenance of the building, a lot of the building systems, you know, power, things like that. And so those are managed from a financial perspective a little bit differently than, say, a DNR cabin or a Pioneer home. And so they have a different system that is able to capture some of the federal revenues paying for the workers that are in that office space.
Just to follow up along that same topic, is there an appropriation to DOT this year from the Public Building Fund?
Chair Bishop, right now they have their operating Public Building Fund appropriation in the operating budget. There's no additional capital maintenance appropriation for the Public Building Fund in the governor's budget request right now. They have a fairly significant amount of existing capital budget authority that they're working down, and we can provide you a report showing that. You
know, please do in the balance in that fund.
Yes.
Thank you. Continue.
So often, you know, people ask the question, how much money is the right amount of money to spend on maintenance of state facilities? There's a lot of different kind of, you know, shorthand rules or formulas people will use, whether it's a 1% rule or 2 to 4% based on this study we were able to find from 2012. And so those are all based off of the replacement value of the facilities that you're maintaining. Excluding the university, the state has about $7.7 billion in facilities in terms of replacement value of those facilities. And just to note, that's a typo. That number is actually from fiscal year 2021, not 2020. So it is a current valuation of the state's facilities. So if you look at the 1% or the 2 to 4% rules, that would lead you to a maintenance funding level of between $77 million and $307 million on an annual basis.
Senator Bulikowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If the federal government is reimbursing the state for workers who are with federal funds, are we structured in a way that we're maximizing using those dollars towards, you just mentioned lease rentals, but also for deferred maintenance?
Through the Chair, Senator Bulikowski, I don't know if I would say maximize, but we are utilizing those funds in the case of public building funds very well. So those agencies that have office space in a PBF building would be paying in and should be allocating those payments to the PBF equally to their different programs that occupy that space. So if a federally funded program requires more space, they should be allocating that bill to that federal program, which would allow us to capture those dollars. That then goes in, and there's actually federal rules on the PBF that requires that the collections over a period of 3 years and the maintenance performed over a period of 3 years balance out. So that it ensures that that money actually gets spent on maintenance of the buildings and not kind of spent elsewhere. So for public buildings, I think that system is very well structured to capture that need. Some of our other buildings, and part of, you know, what we'll get to here in this presentation, that we've been trying to move away from, but have been a little more ad hoc and more state funded in their maintenance.
Public Building Fund is PBF, is that correct?
Correct. PBF is Public Building Fund.
Yes. Thank you. Senator Wilikowski, follow up.
Yeah, it seems like it'd be worth, if we're not certain we're maximizing it, it'd be worth conducting an audit or doing some, a little more investigation to figure out how we can maximize that. Is that fair to say?
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, certainly.
Yes. So on that topic, the state office building, almost got chewed up by the co-chair there for a minute, but state office building, that's a public building fund, would be considered a public building fund available for funding.
Chair Bishop, that's correct.
Yeah. So just as an aside, more than once, some of my colleagues and I have been transversing back and forth in a vehicle and going, when are they ever going to clean the black off the state office building so it shines? So anyway, just Senator Wilikowski.
One last thing. So is there anything legislatively we need to do to ensure that we are maximizing these federal dollars?
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, I think the response there would be just to ensure that, you know, operating maintenance within agency operating budgets is, you know, accurately reflected. That's something that we try to do at OMB, is to try and ensure that operating maintenance side, at the very least, is capturing those federal funds. It's a little bit harder when we get to the deferred maintenance list, where it's spending with unrestricted general fund. We do work with a couple of agencies that have more significant federal funding coming in. So for example, the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs, we're able to capture a lot of federal funding for maintenance on their facilities, like the Military Use Academy. And you'll actually see in our capital budget, there are some appropriations specifically of federal funds for that maintenance. We also see some for things like the Veterans Pioneer Home in Palmer, where that receives a considerable amount of federal funding and can capture some of that for its maintenance. It's a little bit harder when you get into some of these smaller facilities where it's a little bit harder to track, because the key thing is you need to be able to track that the usage of the facility is associated with that federal program. And so it's just kind of a issue of constant vigilance. But we do have, you know, for the ones where there is significant amounts of federal funding or federal programs that can be tracked back, we are doing that.
Thank you. Please continue.
So to try to provide a comparison to the previous 1-4% rules, the slide here that you see, the top portion is funding in the capital budget. So this is the deferred maintenance appropriations to the Office of the Governor, the court system, Fish and Game, and the Department of Natural Resources. The bottom portion is an attempt to capture all of the operating budget funding for regular operating maintenance within state agencies. So this is the just kind of recurring maintenance costs, payment for those maintenance personnel at Division of Facility Services, that work that they perform. When you add all of those together, you get $106 million. And so this is, you know, at the lower end of that 1-4% range, but, you know, when you account for operating budget maintenance, we are within that range, but on the lower end.
Mr. Steininger, and is it safe to say, and if I'm misspeaking, correct me, that all in capital and M&O is $106 million. Is it sometimes a challenge with agencies that maybe they could use a little more of their M&O for their capital side or vice versa? You want to?
Chair Bishop, there is a bit of a challenge in terms of ensuring that, you know, that operating side maintenance is working in tandem with the capital side funding, and that we make sure we're maximizing, you know, the most efficient way to get some of this work performed, and that smaller projects get accommodated within that annual operating maintenance and don't become bigger concerns. I think that's been a concern that led to sort of this consolidation into Division of Facility Services under the prior administration, was that concern of ensuring that operating maintenance costs were being, you know, managed well across all agencies and getting a better handle on kind of setting the right standards to try to work towards deploying that $77 million or $76.4 million better.
Thank you. Next. Senator Von Imhoff.
Thank you.
Sorry.
So you mentioned that the $106 million is on the lower end of the 1% to 4% range. Do you think that this level leaves room or potential for some of this deferred maintenance to become bigger concerns?
Through the chair, Senator Von Imhoff, you know, that's kind of a bit of a speculative question, I think. You know, we're within recommended ranges, but the important thing to note about the recommended ranges is they're not perfect either. You know, they're kind of a guess based on the types of facilities, and as I mentioned earlier, there's a pretty wide diversity in the types of facilities the state has, and so a facility that's highly remote, that's difficult to, you know, send a maintenance person out to do routine maintenance, is more reliant on, you know, the individuals that are operating that facility from programmatic side to perform some maintenance duties kind of outside of the scope of their normal job. And no amount of funding within the 1% to 4% will necessarily meet that kind of operational consideration. So I don't know that there really is any perfect level of funding. I think the way that we're currently funding maintenance, while we have a large backlog of deferred maintenance, the way that we're currently funding maintenance has been trying to keep that stable at this point, and I think there's been some success there, but it's always an area of concern. We have some very old facilities.
I'd just dovetail real quick, Senator, if I could just, you know, we're not even treading water, and it's not a dig on your administration. I've said it ever since I first came here as a commissioner sitting on the other side of the table. So anyway, that's just my comment. Senator Von Imhoff.
And so that's actually the word that I wrote down. I said getting ahead versus treading water versus backsliding. And I think that while we're within recommended ranges, I think you got to kind of take a look at it as a whole, as in how much infrastructure do we have, what are their ages. I mean, if we've got a bunch of new buildings versus a bunch of older buildings, then it's going to begin to escalate over time because these older buildings are not going to get any younger. And I think that sticking with 1% may work for a period of time, but it may not work in the future because some of this stuff will start catching up with us. I do have a concern. It's more of a rhetorical question. I mean, has the OMB contemplated the policy ramifications or consequences of paying $106 million towards deferred maintenance versus $1.6 billion towards a cash liquidation, or all in all, 2.5 $5 billion when you look at the catch-up dividend. What are the policy consequences of leaving so much money not going towards deferred maintenance and instead going towards a dividend or a series of dividends? How is that going to affect the deferred maintenance as we go forward?
Through the chair, Senator von Imhoff, looking at these two, those are two very separate issues, and really are driven by completely different policy considerations. So the payment of the dividend really is not necessarily something that we think of as a issue of policy prioritization internal to the administration. That's a default state of a payment out to the people of Alaska that needs to happen first before we even start to consider, the money that we're spending on government. It's, the administration's perspective is that's not a, a policy item to be weighed against other concerns of government. It is the default state that that money is shared with Alaskans first. Deferred maintenance, however, then has to, compete against other operating and capital budget priorities. And so when we're putting together the budget, we do try to look for how can we cobble together, different sources of funds. You'll see in prior budgets use of a lot of reappropriations of lapse in capital projects being sent into the capital income fund in our budget recommendations to try to boost that dollar value up. One thing I didn't note when I started this slide, the capital income fund listed here is the fund source that comes from earnings from the portion of the permanent fund ring-fenced from the Amaretta Hess case. And so there is a sort of designated stream of revenue that goes into deferred maintenance that often spins off between $20 to $30 million a year, and that helps supplement that operating level spending. And then we'll look for other sources. You can see there's some UGF here. There's some use of federal funds. But those are prioritizations that happen within the operating budget, not necessarily considered against the dividend.
My last comment, Mr. Chairman, and I'll make it quick.
Please.
I do appreciate you explaining the philosophy of your administration. It is a policy call. I don't think it's exclusive. I think all spending, whether it's on capital, retirement, operating, deferred maintenance, or the dividend, all comes out of general funds, cash. It all matters. If a household paid themselves first and then ignored the leaky roof and the furnace that was on its last legs, I don't think that the consequences could be pretty dire. I hope that this committee looks at possibly increasing the deferred maintenance a little bit just so we can stay on top of it and not let a bad problem become worse. So thank you for indulging me, committee members.
Thank you. I'll have some wrap-up comments to that policy at the end. Mr. Steiniger, let's move along. Next slide.
So slide five is illustrating the amount of the deferred maintenance backlog. So when we look at the backlog, if we exclude the university, state facility backlog is about $703 million, or about $704 million. You can see the bulk of this is in facilities owned and operated by the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities. That's nearly $260 million for those maintenance stations spread throughout the state and other facilities owned by DOT. The next bar here is the PBF, or the Public Building Fund. We've segregated that out from the other DOT facilities. So very recently, we've worked to transfer the Public Building Fund from Department of Administration to DOT, kind of as one of those final phases of that consolidation of facilities maintenance. But I think for some of the reasons, that definitional reasons of what PBF buildings are, it sort of helps to have that split out and segregated from other DOT facilities. Then you can see, as you would expect, Department of Corrections is a very facilities-heavy department, and Department of Health and Social Services has many of our 24-hour facilities, and so they are much larger than other departments.
Thank you. No questions. Next slide.
So here, this is a portion of my presentation where I'll transition a little bit to the Department of Transportation Division of Public Facilities as they talk about how they rank and score projects. But just briefly, the allocation process, the appropriation comes into the Office of the Governor, managed by the Office of Management and Budget, in order to ensure that it's distributed based on statewide need and based off of objective criteria regarding facility condition and use. Those criteria, Director Arnolds and Mr. Hodgin will be able to go through in much more detail. But the basic process is that OMB acts as a facilitator for the State Facilities Council. That council is made up of representatives from every agency that occupies a, buildings that they, occupy and work out of, in order to ensure that, that voice of the actual programmatic side is heard within this allocation process, because that's very important to know how the building's being used and what its purpose is in state government. That council then goes through workshops to review the projects from each agency, the highest priority projects, rank and score them, and then put forward a final prioritization recommendation. That list is generally received by OMB in May, so we're expecting this in May of 2022 for the distribution of the deferred maintenance items appropriated for the fiscal year 23 budget.
Questions? Just a brief one on, is it typical, give me an example from some of these departments. Is it the ASD directors or, give me an example from Department of Labor, who's the lead?
Chair Bishop, depending upon, I don't know who the lead for the Department of Labor is, I'm sorry, but just depending upon the agency, it may be the ASD. And it could be a facilities manager, a previous facilities manager, division director that oversees some of the larger facilities in the department. You would have representation from, say, Mount Edgecombe High School because it's such a large, facilities complex for Department of Education. You would want that voice heard in there. But for other agencies, you may have the ASD able to cover this duty.
Thank you. Next slide. Senator Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Actually, I had a question on the previous slide, and maybe this is something that we can just get back into. I'm just looking at the deferred maintenance and the appendix and supplemental, but on the previous one had sort of the dollar amounts and just trying to figure out the dollar amounts for the court system. They're not listed on this slide, but they're listed on the other slides in the appendix. So just trying to see if Mr. Steininger knew that amount off the top or if he can get back to the committee.
Through the Chair, Senator Wilson, yes, we can get back to the committee. This, I believe the intention here was to show the executive branch agencies, so we might have dropped the courts off inadvertently here.
Thank you. Project ranking.
With permission of the Chair, I'd like to hand this over to the representatives from the Department of Transportation who can walk through some of the more detailed information on how this works.
That'd be Ms. Arnolds, Director, Division of Facility Services, Department of Transportation. Can you hear us?
I can. Can you guys hear me?
Yeah, just a second. Another sound check.
Hold on.
Yes. All right. Is this where you start and pass the baton? Or pick up the baton, I guess.
Yes. So thank you, Mr. Chairman. And for the record, I'm Melanie Arnolds. I am 3 months in my position, so I just want to throw that disclaimer out there. I am the Director of Division of Facility Services for the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities, and then also online for my helpline or lifeline. We have Christopher Hodgins, who's actually the author of these slides and has presented to the committee in the past. I do have lots of experience with the department, so I'm not brand new to the department, but new to this position.
Well, congratulations. In 10 years, you'll have it figured out really good.
I hope so. I hope a little bit before then, but there we go. So if we can, I'm looking at the live, so I'm not quite sure what slide we're on, but
seven.
I think we should be on the project ranking formula slide.
Yes, slide seven.
Okay. Slide seven. So basically through the facility council, we came out with a ranking system to prioritize the deferred maintenance projects among agencies and within the agency as well. So that is the project index value, and we have the formula up right here. It's made up of three main factors, and we'll go into that through this presentation. So you have the mission alignment index, your system factor, and need. These are additional attributes that can be added into consideration as we go through the ranking process, and we'll provide examples of how this workflow or methodology is used. So next slide.
Okay.
On the next slide, the mission alignment, slide eight. So the MAI is, it's a reflection of the criticalness of that facility to the mission, of carrying out the mission for that agency. So factors that go into that is how capable is it to deliver services, you know, how well, how much is this facility utilized, how many people, what type of services, and how, you know, what is basically the larger impact. The most critical facilities of an agency that are directly aligned with the agency's purpose to exist have a higher ranking scale versus the less critical. And we'll talk that through with continuous slides as well. But one thing to recognize that, right, amongst an agency, you'll have multiple facilities, and they don't necessarily carry the same factor. You'll have a varying degree of a factor within an agency. The MII allows us to basically do better risk management to our programs. It guides investments and divestiture decisions. And what's really important to recognize is this is determined by the agency. And it is periodically revisited as we evaluate our overall deferred maintenance list by the agencies. So next slide. So slide nine, the mission alignment index, here's some examples. So we don't need to go through the slide piece by piece, but the importance of this is to identify that we have defined methodology here, defined parameters for the agencies so that we're all using the same ranking methodology, and it's focused, right? You have the different parameters. You have a critical facility, an important one, one that's supportive, or one that is a non-mission critical facility. And then there are basically ranges within those different definitions for the agency to identify their index for their mission alignment factor.
Ms. Arnold, Senator Wilikowski has a question on this slide, I believe.
Okay.
Yeah, thank you. Has the pandemic changed the way you evaluate some of these examples? For example, we have a lot more people working at home. And so our office buildings, for example, have the index scales changed because of the pandemic?
Thank you for that question. So through the chair, I would say yes, and this is part of, you know, that the agencies can go back and reevaluate because the way that we operate and function and carry out our mission, particular through the pandemic, has been very dynamic. and that does trigger modifications and changes. And I think we've all come to realize that, right, there are, especially when you're looking more from an office building, there are many, many functions we can carry out by not being in the building. But a lot of that focus is also, I think that would have a high impact on maybe a component of the facility and facility-wide as well. But so, yeah, I guess to answer it, yes, that has impacted our facility ranking, but I don't really know in regards to the exact degree of those impacts, but it's at the agency's discretion.
Thank you. Please continue.
So going to the next slide, slide 10, the next factor is the systems and needs factor. This is actually a combined factor where if we just run through a quick example, say you're doing a fire alarm upgrade, your current building is aged, the fire alarm system is no longer to current standard, and M&O can no longer support it very well because we can't get parts and pieces for it. So then you would have a system factor, right? We could identify it as a 0.75, and it is a critical life safety system, so then it would be a factor of a 5.75. So that's how the methodology for this ranking component is evaluated. And again, this is the objective of this methodology is to give consistent parameters to all the agencies so that we're prioritizing in a transparent and concise manner.
Ms. Arnold, a question I have, I know it's part of your systems and needs, et cetera, but just for my edification, could you, where which one of these are you plugging in ADA compliance as part of the equation? American for Disabilities Act compliance, you know, automatic doors, handrails, wheelchair ramps, which one of these are you placing that under?
I think they would probably be under health, safety, and structure. It would be on the top factor. And it's also, they're also code required. So that would definitely be at a higher scale because, yeah, ADA is code required. It's not just a guideline. It's also required for the buildings to function. And I don't know. I could, if you need exact examples on that, I would say we would want to get back to you on that because I'm not familiar enough with working with the facility council that I could run through where we've actually scored and graded an ADA upgrade and deferred maintenance.
I would, and I'd also like to know, do you have an ADA compliance officer on your review committee? Thank you. You can get back to the committee.
Yeah.
You don't have to answer that.
Oh, no. I'm taking notes really quick. Yeah, thank you for that question.
Please continue. Next slide.
Okay. On the this slide here, we're showing an example of projects that have been ranked and prioritized in our deferred maintenance combined agency list that has been presented to OMB. So if we take, so these are real live examples, and to just kind of walk through the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities Palmer Highway equipment maintenance fleet here, the SEF maintenance station. So we have identified this as our mission alignment index. This facility is critical for our ability to carry out our mission to keep Alaska moving through service and infrastructure. This is a very critical highway station without it, we would not be able to maintain our roads in the required manner that we're maintaining it. So the problem with this station is we have a failing trench drain system and oil water separator system. This is creating spalling of concrete and deterioration of our of the steel within that floor and trench drain system. It's becoming an operational hazard to our staff, and we also have basically it will make that facility and those bays unusable if not remedied. So therefore, you have your system factors scaled at a fairly higher rate at the 0.80 because this is critical to the operations of that facility, and the need also is scaled, and this is back at this slide here, right? It's important. We identify this as an important system, and then I think it was a 0.9, but it's a safety consideration. So that's how we came up with the 4.9 on that system ranking. And then for the actual PIV, that is just a multiplying these factors. So you have this times this times this, and then here's your index. So the final prioritized list was reviewed and approved by the Facilities Council. Then it is shared with OMB to inform the recommended deferred maintenance allocation.
Thank you. Senator Wilson has a question.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. It sounds like last year the Facilities Council was going to conduct workshops through February and through May to produce a statewide list. And it sounds like the list is completed. Can we get a copy of that list to the committee?
Thank you for that question. We have initiated our first stage of that, so we are planning on meeting, and I'm sorry, maybe we skipped a slide because I thought that was in one of the slides. We're planning on meeting between now and May, and then have that reprioritized list to present to OMB.
I guess
Mr. Steiniger?
Through the Chair, Senator Wilson, I think maybe your question was on the previous year's processes, and we can definitely provide those lists to you.
Yes. Thank you. And just follow up, Mr. Chair?
Follow up?
And if there is a disagreement between the Facility Councils and OMB, how is that conflict resolved?
I will go to my lifeline on that and ask Christopher to explain if there's ever been, if we've ever run into a concern of that sort.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. Are you able to hear me okay?
Yes, Christopher, put yourself on the record.
Thank you. For the record, my name is Christopher Hodgen, and I am a team member of our Department of Transportation and Public Facilities. Thank you. Through the chair, Senator Wilson, just to repeat the question, if there is a disagreement amongst, like, OMB and the Facilities Council regarding an allocation, how is that resolved? So from our last process and the workshops that we had 10 different workshops plus individual meetings with each of the departments. There was not disagreement that occurred over the last cycle. During the conclusion of the cycle, you know, OMB accepted the recommendation from the Facilities Council. During the workshop process, there's a lot of vetting and back and forth on the different priorities of the project. So that was very robust using the methodology. So hopefully that answers the question, but up till now there was not a difference.
Thank you.
Thank you. Please continue, Director Arnold.
And for the record, this is Melanie Arnold. So then moving on to our next slide, which is slide 12. And so I'm just going to read this one out. So the DFS mission is to deliver, improve, and maintain safe and reliable facilities across Alaska. This work encompasses all aspects of construction through maintenance during a facility's life cycle. This centralization provides consistency, expertise, care, and application of state rules to manage integral real property assets. Our administrative costs and Department of Transportation Public Facilities overhead are billed then to the agencies based on our federally approved indirect cost allocation plan rates. Those are published on an annual basis, and currently it is 9.28.
Thank you.
And that is really, that's the end of the DFS presentation component of this, to just talk about how we go through the prioritization and then delivery of those projects.
Senator Wilson.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I think Ms. Steininger went through this a couple of days ago, but if you could answer this question in terms of, you know, how my understanding is that the state of Alaska purchase asset works aimed to assisting and to assist managing the assets and prioritization of statewide facilities a few years ago. How has that helped? Is that currently being utilized by DOT right now, and to what percentage of utilization, and has it helped?
Through the chair, and yes, thank you for that question. That is a very good question. We have implemented our AIMS program, where it's really a cross of a implementation and deployment. So we are working on basically uploading the facility data into those systems. It's not at a point where it is optimized for that, but because we are in transition of uploading information, right? So the information that has to be loaded into the program are basically the assets of all of the facilities, and that wasn't something that existed previously. So we're basically working through massive data input with all of the various users, or actually assist with that process. So it is going very well. It is deployed, and it is currently in transition. And, yes, it will give us the capability of then having electronic management tools to allow us to manage those assets and those prioritizations.
Follow-up, Senator Wilson.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, just wondering when this was purchased, the cost, and how soon it will be completed. It just seems that we as a state spend a lot of money on these type of systems that never get fully implemented, and they always come back with another ask in a supplemental budget or another item in the capital budget for more money to input or other data. So I'm just wondering, what's the priority level of DOT or the state of Alaska to finishing this project?
So I'd like to put a finer point on that question. When's it going to be fully 100% operational?
So thank you for that question. And through the chair, I would say, through recognizing that I am 3 months in on this position, and we've had a lot of staff rotation and impact within our team, so I don't have a completion date that I can give to you, but that is something we can follow up on. But in regards to that, of how it is charged out through our service level agreements. So it is charged out as agencies onboard with DFS for maintenance and operation services. The cost of that system is then shared through those agencies.
Thank you. So to answer your question, we don't know.
We don't have a current timeline on when our system will be fully I guess the right word isn't deploy, but once data is complete and uploaded to the system.
Will it be safe to say, I know you're 3 months on the job. I fully understand that. You brought it up, so I bring it up. You're 3 months on the job. A year from now, are we going to be fully operational, hypothetically?
hypothetically, I would say in certain buildings, yes.
Okay. And I guess, Senator Wilson, if I missed the question, Senator, at the end of the day, are we going to get it operational and then need another new program?
Yeah, I guess, Mr. Chair. I mean, it looks like this is going to take 5 to 6 years, 10 years to implement. And so I just disappointed.
No answer needed. Next page. Mr. Steiniger, are you up on page? Are you back? You got the appendix. This is just information.
Yes, again, for the record, Neil Steiniger, Office of Management and Budget. The next couple of pages are informational charts that, you know, if members of the committee have any questions, I can just walk through them very quickly. This just shows the number of facilities by agency, inclusive of the university here. And then this shows the total square feet by agency. You can see kind of, while the university has fewer in count, they have a lot of square feet, much larger facilities, which accounts for why they make up the bulk of the statewide backlog. And then this last slide is a list of recently disposed of facilities. Since we know that's always of interest to some committee members, how the state has progressed on getting rid of some of the disused facilities so that we don't have, you know, assets that aren't in use that are building up maintenance backlogs.
On that page, I don't see anybody from DNR online, and they probably wouldn't be for today. My question is just for curiosity under the DNR. Fourth bullet. Was that the meat packing plant in Palmer?
Chair Bishop, I'm going to avoid speculating on the record, and I'll get back to you to confirm that that's a facility that's referring to. Yeah.
Thank you. If you would get back to the committee on that. I've had some questions to that effect in my office. Okay. Are you finished?
Yes. Thank you.
All right, next up is the University of Alaska, Mr. Chad Hutchinson. And Alicia Krukenberg, is Lifeline in, Chad, or you got this?
Thank you, Chair Bishop. For the record, my name is Chad Hutchinson, UA State Relations Director. I have a few people online today to assist me. One is our Budget Director, Alicia Krukenberg. We also have some facilities managers at UAF, which is Cameron Wolford, UAS, Nathan Lay, and UAA, Christopher McConnell, if there's any specific questions about projects as we go through. And I will just take a moment to bring up our PowerPoint.
Taking at ease.
Brief at ease. Okay, we're back on the record. Mr. Hutchinson?
Again, for the record, my name is Chad Hutchinson, State Director from the University of Alaska System. So I'm going to go through our FY23 capital budget summary. With this presentation, we presented to Senator Bishop's office a number of documents that I think are very useful. The first one I'm going to reference, if we look at that $50 million amount in our Board of Regents request, as this committee well knows, that's a pretty common number from the University of Alaska throughout the years. We've produced a one-pager similar to what was distributed last year.
That Could is you the pull the microphone a little closer?
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
Thank you.
Yeah, pardon me. So we've distributed a one-pager for the committee's review, and the title of the one-pager is the FY23 Priority Deferred Maintenance and renewal and repurposing. And it essentially has our priority list 1 to 14. And in addition, this year, we added at the bottom our entire deferred maintenance, just so the committee has an easy-to-use document that's listed out. This shows exactly what, number one, our priorities are, and then number two, what the amounts are. So that's an easy reference document in case people want to look at what our standing is and what our position is in a quick manner. President Pitney is all about efficiency, so that document exists. So that's the $50 million that you see there at on the left-hand side of the column, General Funds Board of Regents request. In the governor's proposed budget, he submitted $18.7 million. This is in SB 166. That's Moore and Bartlett. It's our large residential housing in the center of the UAF campus, and that's the issue there is that we have what may be an imminent, complete systemic failure of sewer and water. So it's quite an issue right now. And I can tell you, I used to live in Moore a number of years ago. We had brown water coming through the ceiling back then, so I can only imagine what it's like now. So that is in the GEO bond package in SB 166. I'll go to the second classification at the bottom, in the middle actually, the student IT system modernization. Upgrades. $20 million was the Board of Regents' request. I can tell you that President Pitney has made this her highest priority. We have to upgrade our IT systems to a standard that the students expect now. And the reason why is because of these right here. Our system has not been upgraded since the late 90s, and we need to make sure that it's at a level that our students expect us with regards to applying for school, everything that comes with that. It has to be in a mobile capacity, and it's just even more important as we think about the environment we've just come out of or we're living through with COVID. So right now in the governor's proposed budget, it is true. Now there's $20 million and it's tied to federal funds, and that's in the Coronavirus Capital Projects Fund. There is some open questions that we're trying to determine as it relates to whether we can actually receive those funds and tying it to COVID. And we just want to make sure that's funded one way or the other. And so I just note that for the committee is that, yes, it is true that it is federal funds, but there is a question mark there, and we're trying to resolve with Treasury whether we can actually receive those funds for the purposes upon which we intend them to. And the third category there is
just for, yes. Excuse me for a second, just for everybody at this table knows, and everybody at home if you don't, this table and the both bodies funded the Bartlett Moore Hall last year, got caught up in the vetoes.
Yes.
So we fully recognize the life safety health concerns with Bartlett Moore Hall.
And Chair Bishop, and we are grateful for that. The legislature did support the university, and that is true. That the veto did occur, and so in many ways, a lot of our requests that you'll see with our list, they are very familiar to this committee. There's no doubt about that, and a lot of similarities than what you saw last year. So the third component that you see there,
Chairman,
Senator Wilikowski,
on that point, what were there other projects that the governor vetoed from that you're showing us now, and what was the rationale for vetoing these things?
Senator Wilikowski, I will not put words in the governor's mouth, but I will say that we supported the position of the legislature, and we are very grateful for the legislature for its support with our capital projects, because I think that they recognize the wisdom, and they recognize that there is a real need there. So
Mr. Chairman, on that point.
Senator Olson.
Mr. Hutchinson, to further the question that Senator Wilikowski was asking, is there something there that we're not seeing was the reason that the governor went ahead and vetoed it, or was there just his normal red pen going wild again?
Senator Olson, we have been clear from our perspective, and I do not want to speak on the behalf of the governor, but we have a real need, and it is imminent. So we just continue to raise that voice. and we'll continue to make our best case about that real need.
So there's nothing there, Mr. Chairman, there's nothing there that we didn't see that we should be made aware of.
Senator Olson, I think the legislature did a very good job of seeing the need.
No further questions, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Wilikowski.
Yeah, I don't know if this is appropriate. I'd be curious. We have the administration right here, the OMB director. I want to know why they vetoed these projects. These are critical life and safety issues. And if there's something we're missing here as we deliberate that the governor knows that we don't, I'd like
Steininger?
To hear.
Mr. Steininger?
For the record, Neil Steininger, Director of the Office of Management and Budget, through the Chair, Senator Wilikowski, the reason for the veto of the Bartlett-Moore Hall project last year was that the administration initially supported it as part of the general obligation bond package. When the funding was changed to unrestricted general fund, the project no longer was part of our financing plan for state capital projects. So it was vetoed not as a, the veto should not be taken as an indication that the administration doesn't support the project itself, simply the way that it was funded. Ultimately, last year, there were several capital projects that the administration put forward as part of our general obligation bond package that were appropriated by the legislature as unrestricted general fund. The administration still, and this is why we have a general obligation bond package before the legislature again this year, still wishes to take advantage of low interest rates for financing projects such as the Bartlett and Moore Hall. So there wasn't any other underlying issue surrounding the project. We still support the project. We've put it forward in our general obligation bond package. But we think that the right way to accomplish some of these projects is through that bond ability to bond.
But that, just on that point, GEO bond, that's on a wing and a prayer if the voters are going to approve it or not, too. So. Senator Von Imhoff.
So the administration would rather go into debt to pay these things and incur the cost of interest than simply to divert some cash to pay for these and not incur debt.
Through the chair, Senator Von Imhoff. I know we would certainly be very happy to bring forward the state debt manager in a hearing on the bonding proposal, but in short, with where interest rates are now compared to the earnings potential the state has for its own money, the arbitrage that the state is able to capitalize on to finance things through debt is advantageous. So long as our debt program remains within a reasonable level and we feel that the bond package that we've put forward is within a reasonable tolerance of debt that the state can hold and afford to pay down over time. And we're still within this low interest rate environment, and we think that we should capitalize on that while it's still available.
One last comment.
Follow up.
Thank you. So it's, once again, it's a philosophical difference, and it's one that I've had with this particular administration for its entirety. The interest rates, if anyone who reads the news and follows Financial Times, it looks like rates, good chance will be going up. They have in Europe. The United States may follow. The arbitrage that you talked about will probably shrink. And again, GEO bonds, Jeff, generally by tradition, go into capital projects that are expected to generate revenue for the state, and that's how they're paid back. When I see GEO bonds being used for deferred maintenance for buildings that are not going to be generating projects or generating revenue, we have to find revenue somewhere else to pay for that interest. There's no response. I mean, I just wanted to state for the record, Neil, I got it. It's a philosophical difference. Thank you.
All right. Senator Wilikowski, follow up.
Yeah, thank you. I'm just trying to understand this, Mr. Chairman. You have buildings in the university system that are 60 years old. They have plumbing issues. They have ventilation issues, heating issues, lighting issues, electrical issues. They're out of code compliance. From the detail we have, it says these deteriorating systems have caused class and research cancellation, have eroded UAF's ability to obtain new grants and initiatives. There's asbestos issues. These are life and safety issues. And you're saying the governor would rather veto it over some philosophical disagreement how we fund it than fund life and safety health issues. Is that what you're telling this committee and the people of Alaska?
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, certainly not in necessarily those words, but when we were working on the review of which projects, like the review of signing the budget last year, the veto review process, you know, the main consideration there was whether the project was something that we felt would be better supported through a bond package or through debt, versus using what at that time were very limited general fund resources. One piece of context that we have to keep in mind is when the budget was signed last year, revenue looked much different than it does today, and that informed a lot of those decisions. We definitely see and recognize the need at the university. That's why we're continuing to support the project through our bond package this year. And you know, we are asking the legislature to give that its due consideration.
Well, I think we're going to give it due consideration, but it might be coming in another form. So,
well, just
follow up.
So you're saying if the funding for these projects comes in through the general fund as opposed to a bond, you're not going to support it again. Is that what the governor's saying?
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, that is not what I'm saying. I am saying that when that project was vetoed in the budget process last year, that was a consideration made. You know, the factors then were different than the factors are now. We still want to see this project funded through a general obligation bond package. That's the way that we're currently supporting the project, but I can't really speak to, you know, future consideration and deliberations by the governor in terms of how we will, you know, consider appropriations made by the legislature and put on his desk for signature.
Please continue, Chad. You heard the bells, so yeah. Let's pick up the pace here a little bit, please.
Thank you, Chair Bishop. So I'll move quickly. So economic development, just for the committee's reference, this is the ways that we've been working with the administration about how we can help Alaska. And the categories of research development projects that have been funded by the governor's proposed budget is drones, critical minerals, and enhanced oil recovery. And I think that there's an expectation in the future that we'll present on those good projects. So here, just as a graph form, this committee's seen this before, it's our backlog with deferred maintenance. It's approximately $1.4 billion. There was in FY22 a $5 million allocation given, and we have Director Kruckenberg online that can explain some of the details related to that.
Before we do, Senator Wilson, you had a question, and I've got a comment.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, actually, I had a question on the previous slide, or it could be the next slide, but just looking at some of the statements that Mr. Hutchison, you made earlier about the questionable use of federal funds for for coronavirus, in your deferred maintenance list, you have what I would think would be more acceptable use of those funds for HVAC systems and other water replacement issues within your university. Why are you looking to use those funds for IT system upgrades and not more of HVAC or more of those type of life safety issues?
Senator Wilson, through the chair, it's a good question. So the federal funds have to be connected to the coronavirus period. That's the way the governor has proposed that's the way he's proposed it in his budget. Our Board of Regents also looked at general funds would be appropriate from our perspective to make sure that the money is received. There can be a statement case made for remote, you know, COVID is going to be with us like the flu and the cold, and there's going to be this remote workspace that we have to ponder in the future. So I think that case is being made to Treasury to see if that could be some sort of component where federal funds can be allocated for that so that it doesn't necessarily have to use UGF. But that is still an open question. We have not received, similar to what we went through in 2020 with Treasury, we had to go through that process to see what is actually appropriate and what they will connect to. But So that's where that stands, and I can only give you a question mark at this point because we have not received a definitive answer from Treasury that I'm aware of.
Thank you.
Please continue.
So, Director Krugenberg, do you want to speak briefly about the $5 million in FY22?
And can the committee hear me?
Yes, we can. Put your name.
Okay, thank you. For the record, this is Alicia Krugenberg, the Director of Strategy Planning and Budget for the University of Alaska. So I'll just speak briefly about this. This was $5 million of the money that was allocated to the governor's office for distribution last year. So that money was awarded to the university for their most critical deferred maintenance projects. Is that sufficient for the committee's understanding?
I'd just like to make a note on this slide. In 2012, the university bonded for how much money in 2012?
Question.
Was it 50 million?
Senator Bishop, approximately 50 million. That's correct. Yes.
Yes, that's correct.
I'd just like to note that the university took it upon themselves with the budget that they had to went out and floated $50 million worth of bonds, and we've cut and it's eating into their operating costs with their base, and I still advocate for a base increase to help settle that bond debt. Please continue. Next page.
And Senator Bishop, just so everyone's aware, we have documents that were submitted to your office that further explain that $5 million if people have further questions.
Yeah.
This goes again. This is a repeat. We've actually discussed this. The only additional part that I want to just emphasize is the Sekuliak. This is down in Seward.
Stedman's rough on the equipment this morning.
So,
Sekuliak?
Yeah, the additional point here is that that's strictly federal funding authority, that $94.4 million. We're not receiving dollars. That's just the authority at this point in time. Now, at some point in the future, that is true. There is going to be development there. There's going to be an expansion of infrastructure to make sure that world-class facility is maintains that and grows and is something that the city of Seward can use, and we can use it most importantly for our National Science Foundation federal funding, and it's a good project for Alaska. And then this is just further explanations. The priority list that I mentioned before, the one pager that we've given everybody, this just adds a little more detail. If there's further questions, you can see, obviously the most important one is Bartlett and Moore. Very familiar to what we did last year, the UAA campus buildings with the Wendy Williamson Auditorium, the Social Sciences Building, and the Professional Studies Building. Very, very high need. There's no question about it. And then UAS, the Paul Building, we have to get in there with the siding and the roofing and make those changes. So the committee's welcome to see the remainder of our list. This is all on the one-pager, and we've also provided the detailed descriptions of all these projects submitted to Senator Bishop's office if you have further questions about that. With that, I'd be happy to take further questions. Or
thank you, Mr. Hutchison, for your overview. We appreciate it. And our next meeting, this will conclude this morning's meeting. We've got floor in 5 minutes. Our next meeting is 1 p.m., a continuation of our capital budget overview from ONB. Mr. Steininger, we'll see you at 1, I believe, this afternoon, and we're going to probably start off on page 12. With that, we're adjourned. Thank you.